Good evening, everybody. Happy holidays to you. We are here to celebrate the holiday with Robin and Given and Conrad and Mike. They're going to play some music for you. Robin Grant and The Standard, who will be playing a Christmas show at Barking Legs on Sunday.
That's right.
7 o'clock.
We'll be making spirits bright. This
isn't the first time you've done a Christmas show, I don't think. Didn't you do one last year?
We've done an annual Christmas show, oh my goodness, probably ever since we started.
Have you really?
I've always loved Christmas music, and so much that sometimes I burn myself out on it. I never wanted to be one of those cynical, I hate Christmas music kind of people, but sometimes when you play it as much as we do, you can get close to that, but I'm nowhere near there this year. I'm super excited.
I know. A friend of mine was complaining about there being too much Christmas music on the radio. I think really what people are complaining about is not Christmas music, but the naff renditions of Christmas songs that tend to show up on the radio all the
time.
Yes. You know, that are just horrible.
Exactly.
You know, you wouldn't want to listen to them no matter what time of year
it is. I know. Yeah, you have to choose your artist wisely when you're listening to Christmas
music. So this is an antidote for people who are completely burned on the rubbish that you have to listen to in the supermarket.
I love it.
Or the coffee shop or wherever it is that you go regularly.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. And we make it like friends and family. So it's not just us. We have other people that get up and play with us.
Ah, yeah? You want to talk about who that is, or is that a surprise?
Well, there are some surprises.
Uh-huh.
Of course, Landis Batts, everybody can probably predict him. And he does a mean rendition of Merry Christmas, Baby, so... And a couple of other things. So he's definitely going to be there, which is always exciting. And then, yes, we have some surprises this year. So you have to come to the show to see what those would be.
7 o'clock Sunday.
Sunday. Hmm. Yeah. And a lot of people, I don't know if a lot of people, but everyone is winding down for the holidays by the 23rd, which is Monday. So, I mean, Sunday night is kind of the new Friday. We just released our first album, our second album, our sophomore album, Off Label. Not even, a month ago today? How about that?
Wow.
Well, a month ago today was our release party in Chattanooga. So we released it on November the 15th, and it's tracking in the top 20 on iTunes Jazz, which is cool. But now there's so many other sources, you know, everybody's on everything, Spotify, Amazon, whatever. But
do you pay attention to these things?
I as an artist, I think you kind of have to.
So have you found that you've got a bigger audience on one of those than another, or it's kind of spread about among all of them?
Well, you know, it's funny. When our first album launched, we were in the top four. We debuted in the top four on iTunes. Back then, I think most people purchased iTunes. That was kind of the one stream everyone knew to get the music. Now it's so diversified that you kind of really have to pay attention to all of them. I think Spotify is definitely probably the premier one now.
It seems to be, doesn't it?
It does.
Most people I talk to seem to have a Spotify.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and play a cut from the album?
Okay. Do you want to start with it? Okay.
Instead of Christmas, we'll come back to Christmas.
All right. What do you want me to play?
Mike, Mike wants to play Love Story. That's his favorite. So, yeah.
Love Story?
Yeah, Love Story. It's the first song on the album, and it's pretty upbeat. And I wrote this one kind of to everybody that feels like they need somebody to be somebody. Sometimes it's best if you work on yourself first, because as I say on the song, you must first love yourself before you can love somebody else.
So true.
a love story, write your love story.
That is the song that opens Robin and the band's new album, Off Label. This is the name of the album. That's called Love Story. Which, it has a nice, easy swing. It sounds like the kind of music that they started making in the 70s.
Yeah, I think I have a lot of 70s influence, probably.
Well, that was, you know, that was kind of a big shift from the way Sinatra and people like that sang before.
Yes.
The way you're singing on this, did it change the way you approached the other traditional stuff that you sing?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, I think I was listening to something I sang like a year ago in a voice note, and I thought, man, I've changed the way I sing things a little bit. And so I guess it has, inadvertently. I think when I was younger, I was trying so hard to mimic what I thought jazz was sounding like to me, that maybe I wasn't truly authentic to my sound. And I don't know if it's really age or time or more writing on my end, but whatever it is, I think now I'm just being more true to myself, to my artist self, I guess, and just kind of singing things the way I feel them and not necessarily trying so hard.
Sounds to my ear that you're singing for the microphone.
Yeah.
When I first met you and you were mostly performing live. It's different, isn't it, when you go in the studio?
Very different.
I guess it must feel really weird. It must feel like somebody's sort of holding a big magnifying glass up on you. Everything that you play, everything that you sing, you know, every sound is magnified.
Totally. And you do, I think the hardest thing in a studio when you're used to live performances is you get so much feedback from the audience. And you anticipate that and you look for that. And in a studio, you don't have it. If you're looking
just
at that,
each other.
If you look into that microphone, it's not always going to love you back. So you have to, I guess, get into that space in your head where you are singing to someone. So, you know, it's not necessarily the microphone, but I'm sure every song I was trying to sing to someone and make the performance very in the moment. And also, I think just really feel the song. And that's harder when you're not getting the feedback too. I mean, you've got to put yourself in a place where you are receiving the feelings that you normally feel when you sing it, even though you're not. And
yeah,
you've got to get in that headspace.
It's an imagined space.
It is. Yeah. It has to be.
And I think Mike helped you, didn't he?
Absolutely. He was like my coach. I keep saying I should have given him another production credit on the album, because he was always with our producer, Dran Michael, in the other room coaching. And I love that, because I had Dran, who was very new to my voice and new to our sound as a band, and Mike, who knows my voice like the back of his hand, and both of them were coaching me. So it was like Dran was kind of bringing us into a new place with our music and our sound, but then Mike was making sure that we retained who we were and what we sound like, and that it is still Robin Grant and the Standard.
So it was Dran that gave you that kind of 70s gloss on it.
I think Dran just gave the gloss. We both teased each other, because he was like, you are so extra. And I'm like, oh no, you are so extra. So, you know, we both have that flair, I think, for the dramatic. And so it was good to work with someone who does kind of have the same vibe that you do in terms of everything is kind of, I've talked about a movie in my mind, and I see movies when I sing, and that kind of cinematic vibe I wanted in the album. I wanted that sound. But he had that same feeling. I mean, he was like, I hear James Bond when I hear you. You know, I hear cinema. I want to retain all of that. I want to hear the polish. I want this album to sound like money, was what he said. And not from a, you know, a financial, but just glossy and slick and polished, and, you know, where we don't sound like some local band. you know, who's put out an album. But
whatever that sounds like.
Whatever
yeah.
that sounds
I
like.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
That's largely in the recording process, I think.
In any town, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the more I listen to this, the more it sounds like a band record.
Yes.
You know,
good.
Given sounds really good.
Given sounds,
you know,
great.
He brings a nice swing. Mike is playing really well. We've talked before about it being a drummer's record, and it
yes.
does sound like that.
Yes.
Know? Conrad is right in there, and Marquis too sounds so good.
Yeah,
you know,
thank
he's
you.
Just like all over the place, right across the spectrum.
That one solo, oh, talk yeah. about sounding like money on that song in particular. It's just fantastic. He's so elegant. And his Mike and I talk about his voicings all the time that he chooses. You know, I give him a lead sheet with the chords, but he transforms those chords into so many different voicings that it just, that's where the magic happens. But yes, they're all, I mean, so talented, and I'm so blessed to be able to have such gifted musicians. Yeah, we always say given was given to us. He gets tired of that, I'm sure. But and that's truly, you know, where the magic in these songs happen is, you know, I hear them in my head. I put them on my voice notes in my phone, and then I record them and get home and put the chords to them. But when I bring them to the band, they come alive, and everybody puts their own individual stamp on their part, and that's what makes the magic. And I'm glad that you think it sounds like a band album.
Oh, it does. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine what it must sound like to you when you've got this sketch in your mind, you've got the lyric and you've got the melody sketched out, and then these guys come in and flesh it out.
Absolutely.
Must feel really good.
Yeah, I mean,
I can hear it in your voice when you're singing.
You know? Yes. Well, you know, there's a song in particular that Conrad plays on called Within the Sound of My Voice. And when we first played that one as a band, I think that we all heard like this big orchestral arrangement that we thought would end up being the result of the song. And when we got into the studio, it was like, really, it didn't need any more than us. If you tried to put any other layers on it, it would have probably been overdone.
Yeah, that's my feeling, because it's such a full-sounding band record, you know?
Good.
Yeah,
yes.
I think anything, you're right, you know, anything you added to it would not only feel superfluous, but would take away from that spirit.
Absolutely.
You know? You want to listen to that then? So this is called Within the Sound of My Voice.
Yes, absolutely. Thank
this
you.
This is our guest, Robin Grant, with her band The Standard, and they're going to be at Barking Legs on Sunday evening, 7 o'clock, for a Christmas show.
My grasp, I must breathe.
Go, Mike. I mean, for a man who frequently just plays with brushes, you got a lot of presence on that track.
Power hitting.
Yeah, that's some big hitting going on that one. Slapping them.
Pull it over. Pull that microphone over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Slapping them. You know, hitting them. Pow, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've ever heard you play like that before.
No.
Was that something that grew out of these sessions?
It did. And we just felt like the drums in this particular song is almost like it's a voice,
mm-hmm.
part of the important aspect of this particular tune. Adds to the dramatic aspect of it.
Yeah, and the strings that Robin was talking about would be absolutely superfluous there.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the band. I mean, that's the band playing that song, and it just sounds so full, mm-hmm. you know, when you listen to it.
And it sounds like, was that cello in that?
Was that Conrad
playing cello?
Conrad, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was really all it needed. I mean, we had thought, we need to, you know, have Conrad write a string section and, you know, bring in some violins and violas and all these extras.
Oh, shoot, we were thinking brass and the whole
and
nine
yeah,
yards.
Yeah, originally, we were thinking kind of Elton John, 70s, you know, yeah. big symphonic kind of vibe, but it just...
Yeah, Paul Buckmaster treatment, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It didn't need it.
It doesn't, no, it sort of reminds me of Elton John when it was just the trio.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of space in it.
Yes.
You know, and that gives you... It seems to give you some room to the swing.
Yeah. This song was interesting because when she came in and introduced it to us, you know, Marcus was, of course, he had his keyboards already set up and all. And she walked over and she goes, well, I've got a new one for us. She goes over to the keyboard. She starts playing this thing. And I'm thinking, where did, what? You know, what is that? That's, you know. So, but boy, it was.
And Marcus pick up on that immediately? Because it seems
absolutely.
Like he did.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And of course.
He plays those things that run across the spectrum, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all that beautiful stuff that he does in there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All substitutions. You know?
No, yeah.
You'll never play a straight chord, you know.
Robin, you know I don't play block chords. That's what he always tells me.
No, he doesn't.
No.
No, he doesn't.
And I'm trying to remember, Given, did you play upright on that one? Or was it electric?
No, I don't think so. The electric. Oh, yeah. Electric. Can you hear me?
First time on a microphone. No, I'm teasing. So you played electric.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that different? My guess would be that the electric is maybe allows you a bit more, I don't know what the word is exactly.
Volume, for one.
Well, yeah, but it's also that kind of the action of the neck on an electric
dexterity,
electric bass as opposed to an acoustic bass.
Yeah, it's. I mean,
it seems like it's more, it allows you to be more limber, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Move quickly across the notes, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I would say I'm more comfortable playing upright, but overall I can do more in the electric just because I don't have to make the volume with my body. You know, I can have a volume knob that I can just turn up, and so I can focus more on just executing technique and not doing it with power, which is something that people don't think about that involves, you know, upright playing a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's how you get that. I mean, it's almost like a guitar,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
It's just a bass playing guitar lines, so it's got that looser, more fluid feel that would be difficult to accomplish on a stand-up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoy
and
it.
We both love stand-ups, but that's a whole different vibe, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's advantages to both.
Yeah.
That's why I play both.
But for what you're doing with this record, I'm guessing that you've mostly stuck with electric. Is that true?
You mean with Robin Grant or just in general?
Yeah.
No, actually, it's kind of gone the other way around. Ask the question
album.
Again, what you're saying?
On this record, the sound of this record and the style of music that you're playing would seem to lend itself more to electric than
acoustic.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. And actually, I was going to say that recording process in general is really tough with the upright. But Dran's studio actually has done it better than anything I've heard. So we got some really cool upright takes. But in general, electric's just easier all around to record with.
But then a song like Man's Man.
Yeah, that's upright.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that's classic, you know, Peter Gunn kind of sound, you know.
Yeah.
Henry Mancini, that kind of drums, bass sound.
Yeah. Robin's having me learn how to sing while play, so I'm really thankful for that.
Oh, yeah. I'm stretching them. Yeah. And Given has a beautiful singing voice, might I add. And so Mike does. I mean, we all know Mike does because he's done things with me before harmonizing. But, I mean, Given does, too. I'm like, added bonus, a bass player who can sing. I mean, how many of those are
he's
around?
He's quiet about these things, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a cheeky little fellow,
yeah,
as you would say.
Keeps it under a bushel.
Maybe.
We're bringing it out. Don't you worry, Richard.
You want to do some Christmas songs?
Let's do one. Let's do, we're going to do an acoustic version of...
grab
your brushes. It's a combination of We Three Kings and God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. We just put it together, so how about that?
Today's an electric day. I apologize for everyone looking for upright.
Yeah.
I can't leave it in my car for this long in the cold weather.
In the cold weather, yeah. I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It hurts
one of
his feelings.
Drawbacks.
Yeah. That's okay. You can still, you got it on electric.
God rest you, Mary Johnson, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born upon this day. He'll save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. All tired ends of God's heart and joy, comfort and joy. All tired ends of comfort and joy. From God, our Heavenly Father, the blessed angel came and went to search some shepherds, brought tidings of the same.
I think those old boys are quite merry after that. They sounds like they had a nip or two. So when you do the Christmas shows like this, is it a mix of songs from the album and songs that you like for Christmas?
It will be this year since we just released an album, so for sure. And usually we do incorporate both because we do have some people in the crowd who are there because it's us and not necessarily for the Christmas music. They may be there to get away from the Christmas music, but I promise you the Christmas music we will do in style. And we do a lot of the great classics that people want to hear. You know, we like to play the hits of Christmas. And so we will do them probably more so in our old school style, very vintage and vibey and classy and sassy, like we like to keep them. And then we also bring in friends and, you know, we talked a little bit about that. So it's nice because it's a nice mix and different kind of flavors. It's not just all one layer.
Yeah.
And so it gives people a nice variety. It's kind of a...
Well, give us a straight read of something as an example of that, then.
A straight read of...
A Christmas song.
A Christmas song?
Not jazzing it up like you just did, but the impression I'm getting is that a lot of them, you play them as they were written, right?
Well, I would say we do the classics for sure, but I mean, I would say everything sounds authentic to who we are. But,
ah, gotcha. Okay.
But we do give them that old school vibe, you know. I would say, wouldn't you? I mean, we do them pretty much straight ahead, like the classics that they are.
I would say mostly there is usually an essence of jazz in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little jazzy flair.
So how does that work, Evan? These guys weren't thinking jazz when they wrote these songs for the most part, were they?
You're talking about Christmas tunes?
Yeah. So how is it, when you come to arrange one of those songs?
I guess, though, right? That's the case with a lot of standards, I think. But it does really, yeah, I was actually having a conversation.
Come a little closer.
Having a conversation with someone about this, where Christmas tunes really lend themselves well. I think you said this today, too. To be jazz tunes, and it's true, like, this time of year, I tend to get a little bit more busy because people actually, you know, will hire out jazz combos for their events, for Christmas music and all sorts of things.
So it seems to me that there's at least three generations of Christmas songs, right? I mean, there's really old ones,
mm-hmm.
you know, that go way back.
Yes.
And then there's the Victorian ones.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
like the ones you just sang.
All right.
And then there's the songs written by Tin Pan Alley guys in the 30s and 40s.
Gotcha.
And that's when jazz was preeminent already, right? So
I don't even know which ones we're listening to. Are we listening to a combination of all those three these days?
I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas, for instance.
Uh-huh.
Right, that's Irving Berlin, right? So that was written in the jazz age.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's one of my favorites, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just watched that movie last night, White Christmas.
I love it.
It's so good.
And Ella, you know, Ella's Christmas record.
Yes.
You know, Sleigh Ride and Jingle Bells and all that, and she makes them rock, you know.
Yeah, we're going to have some of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Christmas
I knew you
songs
would.
Written by Mel Torme, you know, during that period.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I think, and then, you know, you have new people writing Christmas songs, too, that are, you know, younger and trying
to write.
That's true. Yeah. So
I just saw in the paper yesterday that Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. Apparently, she recorded it in 1994. It's number one this week.
That's not a new song.
It finally made it.
Yeah, I would say that song alone pays her more than, I mean, anything she's ever done. I mean, for sure. You think about how many people have just recorded that song. You know, even Michael Bublé did a jazzy version of that.
That's why we think that Robin should write a Christmas album coming up sometime.
I've had more than 1 to 10 requests. So that may be in our future, yes.
Well, definitely. And I know, you know, you lean towards the classics.
Yes.
And at Christmas time, most of us do. But do you hear contemporary Christmas songs that you like? And have you taken a stab at those at all?
Not so much. I will give one secret away. I do love George Michael's writing on Last Christmas. And, I mean, that was the 80s, so that was quite a while ago. But, I mean, I think that's a great Christmas song.
In Christmas terms, that's still new.
It's still new.
But I would put a plug in for the McCrary Sisters' Christmas album, if you've heard.
Yes, I actually heard a little bit of that on a station, and so it made me pull them up. I'm very impressed.
Yeah.
Yes.
They've reworked those songs.
They really have. Yeah.
So these songs lend themselves to, you know, a range of arrangements.
Yeah. Actually, it made me think of Given's girlfriend, Rosie, and her sisters are in a group called Spinster, and they're fabulous. They perform around town, and Rosie's actually a bass player as well. I'm putting in a plug for Spinster.
Oh, yeah, please
but
do.
Yeah,
they
kind of remind me of that kind of sound of the McCrary sisters, too. Like, they've got these beautiful harmonies that only family members can have, you know, and I love it.
They do. I love those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Call Me Spinster, they're called now.
Yeah.
And they're just...
I think Chattanooga's got the nickname, though.
Magical, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just magical sisterly harmonies. They're like... What it reminded me of more than anything, to be honest, and they looked at me like, what old are you? Was Tinkerbell from Fantasia when they sing. You know, it's like these very light, delicate harmonies that they've got, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Pull up Tinkerbell on YouTube. I did, because I thought, oh, no, it's all in my imagination. I went back and I listened. It's like, yes, these are what they sound like. Tinkerbell, you know, she's putting all the dew on the, all the plants, you know.
Yeah.
In the cartoon.
Magical.
I'm going to play some more music before I go any further down this
line. That sounds like a nice image.
Yeah. You like any image of Rosie Wright?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have had some success. Thank you for playing our album on radio here at WUTC.
I am sure you have.
And
it's a good record.
Thank you. And we actually have had a station in Atlanta pick up the song that I think we would like to play next. And it's called Missing You. And the director of their programming, Elliot Sparks, he told me, he said, you know, it's just got that old school vibe. You know, that's just...
For those guys.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Which is, you know, if you go to the jazz fest or go to the clubs down there...
Universal appeal, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there's a, you know, while Atlanta's become known as a capital of hip-hop.
Yes.
At the same time, it's very much a classicist center, I think, in terms of, you know, African-American music.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, I agree. And I think this is one of those songs that after we recorded and the album was finished, I thought, man, I wish we could go back and add different layers of background vocals. And so now, as we are performing this song live... I'm starting to do a little more of that with Landis and Keela as they perform with us, adding in layers to the song that I feel like should be there that kind of give it that, I don't know, a little bit of a Motown flair to it. And
flare.
Yeah, the doo-wop flair, that 50s vibe, I would say. But we can see what you think, what we need to add. Or we can play it. Missing You.
Robin Grant and the Standard.
Thank you.
That's our guest, Robin Grant, with the Standard. They'll be at Barking Legs on Sunday to play a Christmas show.
I tell you, if Mike's not ever unavailable, I'm going to hire you as a drummer because you keep awesome time. I was watching you tap, and I'm like, gosh, he's got great time.
You know, what I was thinking, you were talking about Motown. And at the same time, Motown was making those records in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Chess was making records in Chicago.
Yes.
With the Impressions and, yeah. and Billy Stewart and the names are escaping me at the moment. But they tended to swing more.
Yes.
Than Motown.
Yes.
You know, Motown was pretty straight ahead.
Yeah.
The Chicago stuff, which often didn't get nearly as much airplay.
Mm-hmm.
In its way, it's just as good. And that's what that track reminds me of, you know, that kind of sound.
Well, thank you.
If you're ever looking for material, you can probably find some stuff on there.
Okay,
you
know,
These compilations of Chess recordings.
Yeah, I'll
Which, you know, they're best known for the blues stuff they did, but...
Yeah, but no, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Because I haven't checked out much from that era other than the obvious, you know, things that bubble up. You.
Well, you know, your producer was talking about James Bond,
mm-hmm.
and I assume, you know, he's talking about Shirley Bassey and,
yes.
you know, those big voices that they had on those tracks in the 60s.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's where that was coming from, you know, mm-hmm. that's where they were getting the inspiration.
Yeah, and, you know, it was so cinematic back then, and they had the capabilities to bring in... You know, all the players and session work was plentiful for every great musician. And now so much is digital, you know, that it's cut some of that out. But that's one thing that I'm super proud of about this album is that most of everything is live musicians.
And you gave everybody space.
Yes.
I mean, Conrad took a really nice solo in that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was Dran. Yeah, that was Dran on guitar.
Oh, that was
guitar.
Dran playing guitar, huh?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doing his Mark Knopfler impression.
Yeah. We'll tell him you said that. Yeah. Yeah. He's quite the guitar player. And so he laid some nice solo work on any of the songs that he touched guitar wise were super.
And the pizzicato strings are nice too. Did you do that, Conrad?
No, actually, that was one thing that...
See, I'm trying to give Conrad credit.
I know.
Credit, you know.
Yeah. Conrad's
I'm
there.
I'm going to hit on something.
Conrad was representing, and 3 or 4 songs on that on the album, so yeah, he's well represented on that album. He doesn't have his cello today, though, so that's probably
no,
why
he doesn't.
You're thinking.
He has his guitar, yeah.
He does, yeah. Playing guitar.
What do you want to
Christmas
do song?
Music. Sure. How are we doing on time? Are we doing one more?
Yeah, you can do a couple more if you want to.
Okay, well, let's, should we do a Christmas one? Let's do a Christmas one. We're going to do a different arrangement than we'll be doing live, because Marcus will be with us at the show, but... How about a little Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas?
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your yourself a merry little Christmas.
Right.
You guys are playing more than ever like a band.
Cool.
You know, this isn't a singer with musicians behind her. You are all of a piece.
I love that.
You know?
Yeah. That's the goal.
Bobby Hebb, Sonny, mm-hmm. comes to mind. You know? It's just a magical piece of music, you know. It's really not that much to it.
No.
But it's all vibe,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another one of those chess tracks I was talking about.
Yes.
You know, it's that sound, you know.
Yes. Well, and you know, I mean, I think that's more important now than ever because you never know where people are in their lives, in the season of their life. And if you can sing a song that touches them in some way and lifts their mood or, you know, helps them escape in their mind for a moment to a yeah. better place, then we're all better off, you know?
And don't we need it?
And we need yeah. it. And, you know, it's about connection for me to people. That's honestly the way I connect to people. I mean, I do seem like quite an extrovert, but I really, when I was younger, I was very shy, but I didn't mind singing. And that was always kind of my way to connect with people. And I really still is. I'm somewhat of an introverted extrovert, but I know that my outlet is music. And so I think for me, you know, if we can, as a band, can make that connection with our audience, then we've done something right. And we just want them to leave, you know, feeling lighter. And I think they do, you know, because a lot of what we do is really more like, I guess, old school in the fact that we don't have stand-up crowds, you know, that are moshing and people are body surfing. I mean, and that's all fun and there's a time and place for that, but it's really more listening and going to that place and that space in your mind where you are giving yourself the moment to relax, you know, and we don't get enough of those moments. So, you know, I encourage everybody, even if it's not to our show, that you get out to a show at least during the holidays, because it is a moment of respite. And a lot of times it's hard because it's hustle and bustle and it's hectic. And you think, oh, I would love to do that, but I just don't have the time. But if you give yourself the gift of that time, I promise it's so rewarding. And it's the same for me. If I ever go out and listen to live music, when I come home, I'm always so glad that I did, because it does give you that happy space again in your head where you can recharge your battery and have the energy to go back out and do the things that you need to do. But you can do them more successfully because you've recharged your battery. So I'll put a plug in, not just for me, but for all, you know, of the local acts that are performing this season. Support them not only but for yourself.
Put a plug in for all the other seasons, too.
That's right. As a working musician, Given would say, put a plug in for every season.
I was just thinking, you know, the barking legs is the ideal space to play the kind of music you play, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Like, Given's there, you know.
Regularly.
Well, you're there every month because you curate the Sunday jazz show, don't you?
December 29th, this Sunday, or next Sunday.
And I think you play on the midweek shows some of the time?
Yeah, those are sporadic, but often, yeah. But I was just going to say that sometimes people don't think about how that going out to one show really helps the music community, and it really matters to musicians and to the art, whatever art you're supporting and locally. Mm-hmm. But it ends up in the art getting better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just if every person in Chattanooga came out once a month or every other month, then every show would be funded and more would happen.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
So trying to get that to happen here in Chattanooga more.
Well said, so, Given.
It's going on.
Well, it is happening.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's going on.
You know, it's
slowly but surely.
People like yourself coming here and bringing your music here.
From Baltimore.
It's made a difference.
Yeah, I mean, you know. He could be playing anywhere, and he's here. So we're, you know, as a community, we're so fortunate to have musicians of Given's caliber. So,
this is where our roots are.
Good.
I'm a Chattanoogan.
Yay.
Reborn.
Good. We're even giving him a Southern accent, don't you tell? Can't
Y'all.
You tell?
This is a place to be reborn.
Yeah.
It really is. It's a very supportive community, I think, for music, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You know?
Yes and no. But
well, the barking legs exists, and that you have that freedom to experiment. And, you know, it doesn't bring huge crowds. At least it didn't when I was there. But the crowd that was there was really into it.
Well, barking legs, especially their jazz stuff right now, is picking up. Like, it's actually really encouraging to see. And part of that is because they've been so consistent over the years. And it really was just hit or miss, and I don't know. When I first started going, it kind of picked up a year after I started going, but it was like I said, it was hit or miss, but now it doesn't really matter even who's playing. People just know it's a good night to go out, so they won't even check. They'll just go, which is really great for the venue and for the musicians.
I think it's, it's a hallmark of Chattanooga that people, they take their time, they check it out, and once they decide that this is something they're going to support, people come out and keep coming out.
Yeah,
you know they don't walk away again. They stay with you. You know,
and that's Wednesday nights we're talking about, by the way, mm-hmm. at Barking Legs.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Sunday thing's starting to pick up too, I think.
Yeah,
right?
That's once a month. Yeah, last Sunday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is so true. What you said about how they keep coming out. I mean, I could probably not name on both hands the number of people that come to every show that we do, mm-hmm. and I'm so grateful to those people because we need them and we rely on them, but we also have to grow, and we could not do it without the loyal fans that we have. I am so, so thankful because they could be anywhere, but they choose to be with us and they choose to spend their money with us, and it matters so much. I mean, that's how local artists become, Rolling Stone artists. I'm looking at your Rolling Stone here, and the names on that. But I mean, you've got to have that loyal fan base who keeps paying to come to your shows. Even when, they may be sitting there with, the same people every month but until it starts to take off. But, now we're starting to get to a place where, we're getting new people in addition to our loyal people.
Are.
But I mean,
and this record's doing it too. I think that's bringing you a whole new audience, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's so nice. But I mean, I am forever indebted to our regulars because they're what makes it happen. They mm-hmm. really are.
We're almost out of time. Do you care to do another song?
Sure. You want to end with one off the album and I'll let you pick it because you didn't get to choose one this time.
No, I didn't. That's true.
I know. So yeah. It's your choice, Richard.
I've always loved that stop time thing, mm-hmm. Man's man has got it,
That's his favorite.
It's classic and fresh at the same time.
Good.
Which is really hard to pull off.
When we first introduced it as a band to Given, he thought it was a standard already. He didn't know I wrote it.
Songs.
Yeah, he was like, he said, who did this one originally? I'm like, we did. He's like, no.
To find it in the fake book or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's not in the fake book.
Way to go.
Yeah.
Robin Grant and The Standard, our guests. Happy Christmas to everybody. And if you would like to celebrate the season with Robin and the band, they're going to be at Barking Legs on Sunday. It's the 22nd, starts at 7 o'clock.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
To know when I find him, 'cause I'll be changing up the key. than the